You are tuned in to the Watchman, Shedrick Muhammad, from the Black Coffee Channel.
Nuts like King Kong, then he set the lawnmower out on the dang lawn, and he...
June 3rd, 2009. Yeah, this is big business today. We look at the world through the lens of business principles, not political ideology. But I do want to commend someone on the left who's doing more than just talking and complaining about President Barack Obama. Cynthia McKinney, my good friend, has just started a new organization. I just got this before I came on air. I'm actually going to read my BlackBerry. And this is the kind of music I've been listening to while I've been hugging trees. If you're feeling this, let me know. So Cynthia McKinney has announced the formation of an organization called Dignity, along with a few others on the black left. It says here, which way forward for the black left? The path leads in the same direction it always has, agitation, organization, and confrontation with power. Cynthia McKinney chose a Harlem church to announce formation of Dignity to bring the black body politic back from its current comatose state. Dignity is attempting to show real change is possible if people fight for it. We want to organize networks so that we can relay information quickly to a large number of people. Cynthia McKinney announces formation of Dignity. Former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney addressed a packed house at St. Mary's Church in Harlem this past Sunday, May 31st. And she was also on the podium, sharing the podium with her was Glenn Ford, Margaret Kimberly of Black Agenda Report, Nellie Bailey, Harlem Tenants Council, Professor Anthony Montero of the African American Studies Department at Temple University, and writer activist Mae Jackson. The event was titled Which Way Forward for the Black Left. We agreed to found an action organization and to call it Dignity. So stay on the lookout for that. Cynthia McKinney, not just talking, forming an organization that maybe will force President Obama to respond to a real coherent agenda with votes, money, media pressure, and bodies behind words. I applaud anybody who's going to do more than just whine and complain and expect something from a president who never campaigned on the issues that you cared about. That's why I'm so liberated. I can tell the world I voted for President Obama, but not because of any policy. I knew better. Just like he was forced to acknowledge Nancy Reagan for her work in stem cell research because the Obamacans, part of the Obama constituency called the Obamacans, they were upset. And others who believe that Nancy Reagan played a leading role on that issue. So what does President Obama do? He invites Nancy Reagan to the White House and he heaps praise on her. This is what you're going to have to do to get what you want from brother president. He spit this line last night. He knows better than to get caught up in being herded into caring or not caring about issues courtesy of CNN, MSNBC, and Fox, all owned by corporations that do business with both parties.
I don't find most of the cable chatter very persuasive. I've used this analogy before. It feels like WWF wrestling. Everybody's got their role to play.
Right.
I know a lot of these guys, and you know, if Pat Buchanan is, you know, having a conversation with Chris Matthews or talking to Keith Olbermann, you know, everybody's got their set pieces, and so I don't feel as if I'm learning anything from the debate.
This is the President of the United States telling you he does not feel he's learning anything from debate on ideological cable channels. More business. Facebook and Twitter. Interesting article on Twitter in the Wall Street Journal. Listen up, you entrepreneurs. It says here, Twitter Inc. is confronting a slew of challenges from hiring to keeping its service up and running to finding meaningful revenue. as the microblogging service deals with sudden stratospheric growth. Even as Twitter's users have jumped to an estimated 32.1 million from 1.6 million a year ago, the San Francisco company has just 45 employees, up from around 21 in January. And it has brought on only a handful of people with sales or business experience. You know what happened? This is called the innocent climb in entrepreneurship. The innocent climb. Pat Riley talks about this when the Los Angeles Lakers won their first championship under him. As an entrepreneur, you get out there, you start something, you pour your heart and soul into it, it takes off, but you haven't thought through what you're going to do if you reach a certain level of success monetarily. That's what happened at Twitter. So all of you all Twittering, I still haven't tweeted yet because I just don't want another thing that I have to do. So keep joining my Twitter list. Eventually it is going to come. I have no idea when. The article continues, most of Twitter's employees have had to focus on maintaining the service, which allows people to post and read short personal updates. As such, the company has had to make the trade-off between managing growth and product features. Michael Gerber, the small business guru that I interviewed at blackelectric.com, he calls this the entrepreneurial seizure. Or he would say that the guys at Twitter are technicians, more concerned about making the product than they are in building the business around it. Now, in my book, coming in August, I have a chapter devoted to building your team. I talk about 9 personality types, folks such as the gangster, the engineer, the coordinator, the ideologue, the professional, the entrepreneur. These are 9 personality types that you will have to encounter if you are in business. Twitter right now is more playing the role of a, I would call them professionals, the way I define it. They're more into making, they were, not now anymore, but up until this point, they were more concerned about making Twitter successful and hot and efficient, but not a business. Same thing happened to MySpace. Same thing happened to Napster. Same thing happened to Facebook. We'll get to Facebook in a minute. The biggest issues facing founders Evan Williams and Biz Stone are bringing on new staff to get ahead of its user growth while working out a business model. Twitter is free and the company doesn't sell advertising. Twitter has no current revenue stream to balance the costs, says Gartner Inc. research analyst Alan Weiner. In an interview Friday, Mr. Williams, Twitter's chief executive, acknowledged that the startup's small size coupled with its rapid growth has been constraining. For the entire 3-year history of the company, most of the resources have gone to managing growth, and that is still the case, he says, adding that Twitter could be around 90 employees by the end of 2009. If it weren't growing nearly as fast, we would be building a lot more things. Mr. Williams, 37 years old, and Mr. Stone, 35, said they don't feel any external pressure to change their approach. Instead, they want to develop the company slowly in order to find people who fit with its culture, which they are working to define through rituals such as family-style lunches and weekly teas or happy hours. Now, this is, I hate to say this. See, a lot of what's going on with technology and the internet and entrepreneurship is technology-based. If you don't own the technology, you're always going to be vulnerable to the next innovation. That's what happened with MySpace when Facebook cut in on their growth, and that's what happened with Facebook when Twitter cut in on their growth. Somebody's about to cut in on Twitter. I'm telling you now. I already hear about people getting tired of tweeting. But that last statement, they want to build the company with people who fit their culture through such rituals as family-style lunches and weekly teas or happy hours. It's not going to work, my brothers. Who are the founders of Twitter? Biz Stone and Evan Williams. My brother Evan and my brother Biz. It's not going to work. You are not going to build your company with people who want to have weekly teas. Tree huggers such as myself will come to your teas right about now, the way I'm feeling. I will come to your family style lunches and I will attend your weekly teas, but you need some real hard-nosed business folks who have personal integrity. Later for the teas, later for the family style lunches. Bring a box lunch and a Captain America lunchbox Go get you some coffee and sit down and work. See, the people, the founders of Twitter care more about their, they care more about the entrepreneurial culture in which they created the business than they do in really growing Twitter. They're going to be having problems. Let me get to the investments that have been made with Twitter. Speculation continues as to the company being sold. Twitter raised $35 million for venture capitalists in February, on top of about $20 million previously raised that month. Twitter received a $255 million valuation that makes it unlikely the company would sell for anything less than $1 billion, people familiar with the matter say. So they've already got some venture capitalists who came in. They want their money back. They don't care about no weekly tease. Now, to me, Twitter is already a success. It's already a business success, but it's not going to be what it could be, because you have founders who care more about a certain kind of culture and atmosphere, and they want to maintain this innocent climb, and the innocent climb is over. Twitter now has to become a real hard business, or else it's not going to make it. Somebody in the article goes on to say, Twitter will need more business-type folks eventually, but those are the parts of the business that we haven't fleshed out yet. Now, who said that? Evan Williams, the co-founder, just said what I read. Twitter will need more business-type folks eventually, says Mr. Williams, but those are the parts of the business that we haven't fleshed out yet. They haven't fleshed out that, but they fleshed out that they want family-style lunches and weekly teas. Let's go to Facebook. Says here, Facebook brings in payment system. Now, is this food stamps? Is Facebook about to accept food stamps? According to today's Financial Times, Facebook brings in a payment system. Facebook has begun tapping a new revenue stream with the introduction of an internal payment system, a move that might help the fast-growing social networking website achieve profitability while being less reliant on advertising. The long-rumored payment system, which is in its early stages, will allow users to purchase Facebook credits and then use those credits to buy virtual goods from the third-party applications that run on the site or from Facebook itself. Facebook hopes that by offering a site-wide currency, it will encourage more commerce on the website. By serving as the payment provider, it will capture a percentage of every transaction. Over time, this will be very significant, said Ray Valdez, an analyst with Gartner Research. Social networking sites have suffered with monetizing their services, but this monetizing means making money. So he's saying social networking sites have suffered from not making money, but this leverages the fact that users are there on Facebook. Mr. Valdez said that revenue from its payment system could soon represent one-third of Facebook's income. Users are increasingly spending real money buying virtual goods and credits on the applications that run on Facebook's platform. Zynga, the largest applications developer on Facebook with 42 million users of its games, is reported to be nearing annual sales of 100 million. Together, developers working on Facebook's platform are expected to make more than 500 million this year, perhaps more than Facebook itself. Control equals revenue, said Bruce Cundiff, the director of payments research and consulting at Javelin Strategy and Research. They have that captive user base, and they're going to make it as easy as possible to buy Facebook credits and use them. Facebook has more than 300 million registered users and continues to grow rapidly. Last week, it accepted a $200 million investment from Digital Sky Technologies, a private Russian internet investment group, which valued the company's preferred stock at $10 billion. Preferred stock it gives you preference when the company's liquidated. You would get any money before a common stockholder. You don't get voting rights with preferred stock, but you do get a dividend usually. Through the payment system, is being tested on just 3 applications at the moment. It is expected to be rolled out more widely in the coming weeks. The payments platform could position Facebook to become a significant e-commerce player. All right. Facebook and Twitter. Looks like Facebook, I don't know that this is going to work, folks using Facebook currency. Twitter is in more trouble, I think. But I just want you all to know the business 101 behind the devices, instruments, services, and products and goods that we're using. Very important. Again, if you want to go, we have a Facebook fan page set up for my show. I'm looking for someone to manage it. I've got plenty of archival material if you want to go through best of moments with the show. We can do some things together. Send me an email. You can send it at comment at blackcoffeechannel.com. Today, send in all your comments to comment at blackcoffeechannel.com. Comment at blackcoffeechannel.com. I got Mel Kilgore checking in. I think he's from overseas. He says, I'm listening to you from Norte Zone of Rio de Janeiro in the very black city of Madureira. That's M-A-D-U-I-E-R-A. I'm an exile from the current U.S. economic situation. We have a big world and it is mostly black. Thanks for your show. The internet keeps me close to my home. He sent me an article on racism he wants me to read. Thank you. Also, Jeff Ransom, also tuning in from Brazil with the black scuba divers, and he's doing some business out there. Jeff, peace to you. Thanks for your email. Longtime blackelectric.com viewer. I have to read this story. I can't resist. The culture of bling clangs to earth as the recession melts the rapper's ice. Proponents of gemological excess lament that hard times have hobbled hip-hop. After years of starring in rap music lyrics and videos, bling is losing its ring. The recession is cramping the style of hip-hop artists and wannabes, many of whom are finding it difficult to afford the diamond-encrusted pendants and heavy gold chains they have long used to project an aura of outsized wealth. This is in the Wall Street Journal. I'm not making this up. In an attempt to keep up appearances, celebrity jewelers say rappers are asking them to make medallions with less precious stones and metals. Some even whisper that the artists have begun requesting cubic zirconium. I might have to take the camera off me. Yes. In an attempt to keep up appearances, celebrity jewelers say rappers are asking them to make medallions with less precious stones and metals. Some have even whispered that the artists have begun requesting cubic zirconia, the synthetic diamond stand-in and the QVC staple. Hip-hop luminaries with the cash to keep it real are appalled. Bling aficionados fret that the art of ice is being watered down. Rapper 50 Cent has relished the chance to accuse his musical adversaries of not glittering like gold. During a radio interview, the artist whose real name is Curtis James Jackson III. Now, why are they giving the middle name and the third? It used to just be Curtis Jackson. Now 50 is Curtis James Jackson III. Maybe that's part of his move into Hollywood. Anyway, Curtis James Jackson III, formerly known as 50 Cent, taunted rapper Rick Ross for wearing fake and rented jewelry. Everything that you see has to absolutely be fake, said Mr. Jackson. Rick Ross, whose real name is William Leonard Roberts II, has denied these claims. Mr. Jackson didn't return requests for comment. Send me your comments. Comment at blackcoffeechannel.com. A lot of these rappers simply don't have the money for real stuff anymore, says Jason Arishbin, who crafts custom jewelry for wealthy clientele, including Saudi royals and Hollywood movie stars at his California boutique called Jason of Beverly Hills. It's to the point where they are wearing imitation jewelry, and that's ridiculous. Hard times. But 50 Cent is making a transition. So far, so good, it looks like. His movie career that he's developing. Acting, I should say. From what I understand, 50 just got a sitcom. Yeah, look into that. I think 50 just got a sitcom. And we know he's acting, he's shopping scripts, the whole nine. Curtis James Jackson III. This is now how they refer to 50. I guess this is part of what happens when you make the Hollywood transition. As some of you know, President Obama traveling overseas, not to Africa. Oh no, Egypt is Egypt's not part of Africa. Egypt is the Muslim world, or the Arab world. Here's how ABC Good Morning News, Good Morning America reported it.
Welcome to Cairo. We're just above the Nile River. This is where President Obama will make his most ambitious foreign policy statement to date, trying to convince the Muslim world that the West respects them and that Islam and the Western world can peacefully coexist. But that message is being opposed before it's even given in that new tape from Al-Qaeda.
The tape from Al-Qaeda's number two man, Ayman al-Zawahiri, has a clear message. Obama is not welcome in the Muslim world. He says only corrupted Muslims in Egypt invite America. The tape adds to the considerable tension here, where the president's speech tomorrow is hoped to be a first step to convincing Muslims that America is not at war with Islam. Rather, the two are allies in the war against terror.
The reaction in the Middle East is likely to be very intense. They will be parsing every word, every paragraph, every idea.
Obama has addressed a Muslim audience before in Turkey.
Many other Americans have Muslims in their families or have lived in a Muslim-majority country. I know because I am one of them.
But this time he's in Arabia. People here tell us they'll be listening for specifics about his plan to close the detention center at Guantanamo Bay, on the issue of democracy in the Middle East. And the overarching concern is what his vision is for a Palestinian-Israeli peace plan with a two-state solution.
Yes, Palestine is a key issue.
Moaz Massoud is a popular TV figure who believes Obama's words must be backed by action.
Is his speech enough? Can he really accomplish anything here?
Well, I mean, I was just recently writing, and I ended with, you know, on June 4th, Obama will give the talk. Then the world will wait to see America walk it.
Obama is on the mind of many here.
Obama shop.
Hey, Obama.
Obama shop, they keep saying.
Tourist trinkets liken him to King Tut. His face is all over newsstands. Students at the university hosting Obama will listen closely. Yet they are given hope just by the fact that a brown-skinned president named Barack Hussein Obama exists.
In Pakistan, when they found out it was Barack Hussein Obama, they're like, okay, this is a president who might have some good policies.
Still, they think more than talk is needed.
So we need something to happen. That's the issue. We are not anymore just trusting anyone saying anything, because we have been disappointed by a lot of hopes and by a lot of promises.
So why Egypt? This is somewhat of a controversial choice because of alleged human rights violations here. But there are a lot of pluses. First of all, it is a nominal democracy. It is also the most populated Arab center, and that's important for Obama. He wants to address the Arab community. Also, it is not lost on the administration that Egypt has a 30-plus year standing peace deal with Israel. But regardless of where President Obama chose to give this speech, it will certainly echo through the entire Muslim world, Diane.
Now here is France 24, French news, how they're reporting President Obama's trip.
Now, and Barack Obama is holding talks with Saudi Arabia's King Abdullah on his maiden tour of the Middle East. The U.S. president arrived in Riyadh earlier this Wednesday. The rising price of oil and Iran's upcoming elections, as well as its nuclear ambitions, are both expected to be discussed with King Abdullah. But Obama's visit precedes an important summit in Egypt on the Middle East peace process that's been in limbo for months, as our international affairs editor, Robert Parsons, explains.
Well, the agenda is for speech by Barack Obama. Obviously, he'll be doing other things like visiting the pyramids. He'll be talking to President Mubarak here as well. But the real agenda, the much-anticipated agenda, is the speech that Barack Obama has been promising since even before he became President of the United States. Back on the campaign trail, he said one of the first things he would do within 100 days will be to make a speech from a Muslim city to the Muslim world. And that's what we're going to get tomorrow. he's not coming to apologize, but what he's doing is he's coming to engage with the Muslim world, to end, if you like, the sort of clash of civilizations that we had under George W. Bush, when where we were being told that there were two incompatible worlds. Barack Obama is coming to say that there are not two incompatible worlds. The United States and the Muslim world are not at war with each other. The speech will be listened to very intently indeed, particularly in the Arab world, where they'll want to hear what he has to say in particular about the relationship between Israel and the Palestinians.
Robert Parsons reporting from the Egyptian capital, Cairo. Well, staying in the Middle East, Osama bin Laden has told President Obama that he's planted seeds for revenge and hatred, in his words, towards the US in the Muslim world. That's according to a new recording aired by Al Jazeera. Bin Laden said Obama was continuing in the steps of his predecessor, George W. Bush.
Okay, now, two different takes. Good morning, America, and France 24. I was very impressed yesterday. I was watching France 24, and I bumped into the, what do you call her? She's the European representative of the Palestinian Liberation Authority. It's a sister. And I asked her a question about the two-state solution. Very thoughtful. Now, this is an example of what I'm saying you're not going to hear on CNN. You're not even going to get this on GPS. God bless Fareed Zakaria. Get you some international news in your life. Integrate it. Especially when the president travels abroad, you don't want to trust American news. This is what I heard on France 24. The European Union representative from the Palestinian Liberation Authority. Listen to her view of President Obama and the peace process. Interesting. Certain nuances that she brings up.
Hello and welcome to the interview on France 24. Our guest today has long been the voice and face of Palestine in France. She's now the voice and face of the Palestinian Authority in Europe, in Brussels, to the EU. Madame Saïd, good evening.
Hello.
As many of your fellow people, you experienced exile in Lebanon, Morocco, Ireland, the Netherlands before you settled in Paris. You stayed there until 2005 and then settled in Brussels. You are now answering our questions from Brussels. Mahmoud Abbas had been one of the very first leaders invited by Barack Obama on the 21st of January and was also invited this week by the White House. Madame Saïd, undeniably, a new tone of voice is now being expressed by Washington.
Definitely, most definitely, and I'm very happy, and I mean the entire world is happy that we have a new tone from the administration led by President Obama. In fact, the change for me is a Copernican revolution compared to the tone that we had to live with from the previous term of a president that, who was beating the drums of war, from war in Iraq to war in Afghanistan. And I believe that what's most important in the current changes, prior to even seeing major changes in the Middle East, is that the new president has a language of construction, of building peace, of dialogue between civilizations, and refuses to talk about clashes of civilization as his predecessor did, doesn't talk about the war on terrorism. And I think that he is reaching out to all cultures, to all peoples in the world, to try and, I believe, let's say, to heal the deep wounds that the foreign affairs policies of his predecessor have left.
His address on Israeli settlements in Palestinian territories is probably honey to your ears.
What's important for me is that there's an overall vision, a global vision, not only for Palestine and the specific regions, but everywhere. And there's determination to work with partners. I don't believe that President Obama, in a few days' time, on the 4th of June in Cairo, I don't think he'll present any new statements or solutions for problems that have not been handled yet. What he's offering, and for me what I think is fundamental, is a working method. It's a vision to get work done that he wants to do with the Arabs, with the Europeans, and with the Muslim world. And that's what he said, and that's what he said when he took office. That's what he said in Istanbul, in Turkey, and I believe that's what he'll say when he's in Cairo, and that's what he has said to the Europeans. And for me, as the Palestinian delegate to Europe, I know how much the Europeans are looking to Washington to have the partner that they didn't have in the two previous terms of President Bush.
Okay, we're listening to the voice of Leila Shahid. She is the Palestinian Authority's envoy to the European Commission in Belgium and Luxembourg as well. Leila Shahid, born in Beirut, the envoy of the Palestinian Authority, the PA, to the European Commission, talking about President Obama, the two-state solution, Middle East peace, Western civilization, and Islam.
And all of this gives us a feeling that we can come back to these signed agreements. The roadmap isn't new. The two-state approach isn't new either. But what is new is that now we have an international force built up of states, such as countries such as the United States, the European Union, the Arab Union, and these countries and these associations are ready to be involved, which was not the case under his predecessor.
We are surprised by the different tone of voice expressed by Hillary Clinton. She used to be more pro-Israeli.
Yes, indeed. You're absolutely right. I was worried when President Obama named her as a Secretary of State. I was worried that we would have two different approaches. And I'm very happy, though, and especially during her interview with the Egyptian Foreign Affairs Minister, Mohamed Al-Budrait, she was very firm. She said in front of the press that President Obama and that the United States wanted the immediate interruption of all settlement construction. Not only the unauthorized ones, not only those also for the extension for growth reasons, but stopping the construction of all housing units throughout the occupied territories. It was very clear. And I think it was really important for the Israelis to hear that from Madam Clinton, so that they didn't start playing one against the other. We've seen former Israeli governments trying to play the State Department against the White House or the Pentagon against the State Department. And it's really important that President Obama can count on everyone working with him, meaning National Security and the Secretary of State, Madam Clinton, and the White House.
During the talks with Mahmoud Abbas, President Barack Obama, however, refused to define a timeline. And apparently he wanted to give some latitude to Netanyahu to face up to internal problems and face up to the extreme right-wing faction. Do you believe that the pressure exerted by Washington and Barack Obama on Netanyahu will be sufficient to have him give in and have Lieberman, his foreign minister, give in as well?
That's not easy to guess today, because I think that it is a true obstacle. In fact, the Israeli government's position and nature, in fact, is something quite substantial in this whole process, which requires an Israeli partner. Clearly, the United States carries a lot of weight in Israel, not only as regards the government, but the United States counts a lot for the Israeli people. They've always been used to feeling protected by the Americans. In fact, no Israeli government, even the most staunch, has ever survived a dispute with an American administration. Remember Shamir in 1991. He lost the elections and opened up the road for the dearly departed Yitzhak Rabin, simply because he wanted to confront the Bush senior administration. I think that, yes, the ability that the Americans have in terms of being able to pressure or persuade the Israelis is huge. It's clear that we've never seen a government so far to the right as the current government in Israel. And President Obama is going to give them a chance, though, because, of course, he can't force them. He's going to reach out and try and
You have any comments on this, send it to comment at blackcoffeechannel.com. Comment blackcoffeechannel.com. This is Leila Shahid, the envoy from the Palestinian Authority to the European Union Commission.
Sway them how firm he is, though. But during the interview with President Abbas, the American president said that the two-state solution is not only important for the Palestinians, it represents security for the Israelis, and it's in the interest of the United States. Now, that's the first time we hear such a clear message on the fact that a Palestinian state is in the interest of Americans, not only in the interest of the people directly involved, the protagonists. It's a very subtle message, and I think the Israelis heard it. And I think that President Obama is also speaking to the Israeli people, also speaking to the Jewish community in the United States. And there are a lot of Jewish Americans that share the president's opinion. And these are people who have relations with the Palestinian Authority from President Clinton's time, the Jewish community that believes in the two-state solution.
Leila Shahid, you underlined the fact that Barack Obama was a man of universal dialogue. Could he also reach out to Hamas?
Yes, I believe that he will be changing his attitude concerning Hamas. Maybe not right away, but, you know, yesterday we reiterated the demands, recognizing the Israeli state, recognizing the already signed agreements. And I think that we've already heard from the current administration that there are openings, but this would require for Hamas to be open as well.
The Palestinian Authority, which you represent, however, lacked enthusiasm when European leaders started saying that peace was not possible without Hamas.
I don't think so. First of all, I don't share your opinion. I didn't hear the Europeans say that so clearly. We heard a bit of a cacophony of European voices on the issue. And I would also say that, unfortunately, let's look at 2006, when there were the elections, they wouldn't recognize them, even though they were democratic. They preferred to follow Bush's directives and boycott those. So I'm not really sure that the Europeans are united on their position concerning Hamas. But I think that Hamas, on their side, also has to respond to President Obama's overtures. And we're seeing that as well in Khaled Masharoun's speech. We're seeing some declarations from some of the Hamas leaders. And the discussions need to go further if we really want to build a government of coalition that would represent all of the Palestinians.
That's the point. We know that Mahmoud Abbas is in Cairo today, and he'll probably talk about the talk he had with Barack Obama, but we'll also talk about the inter-Palestinian dialogue under the auspices of the Egyptian authorities. How can we take stock of the Hamas-Fatah dialogue?
Well, unfortunately, not far advanced enough, because we were hoping for an agreement on all the points where we diverge. In fact, there many, and many of the points we diverge on, in fact, are legitimate. We have a vision of a secular state living next to the Israeli state, and Hamas hasn't yet announced a decision on that. But we've moved forward on a lot of issues, elections, security, PLO reforms, and Hamas's entry into the PLO, but we have to consolidate this dialogue, and Egypt has made great efforts to support this dialogue, which will, in fact, which should continue, even though we may not have succeeded yet, but we have to move forward to get organized. It's essential for us to do that, to be able to organize elections for the beginning of next year, because obviously the terms of all of our MPs and our president need to be renewed through democratic election, and that is unthinkable if we don't have national dialogue to hold these elections.
Today, Madam Shahin, there is an objective shared interest between the moderate Arab countries, such as Saudi Arabia and Egypt, the United States, and Israel, as far as the Iranian issue is concerned. Will that not overshadow the Palestinian issue and the two-state solution?
Well, firstly, I don't think so. I don't share your opinion that there is an objective shared interest here. I mean, that's the Israelis' hopes. They would like to convince the entire world that the Arabic states have completely forgotten the issue of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, that they've forgotten about the occupied Golan Heights and that situation.
But a nuclear-powered Iran is not in the interest of any of those countries.
Yes, we agree, but not just the Arab states, the European Union, the United States as well. But the Arabs do have a proposal for a Middle East without nuclear weapons, but that would include not only Iran, but Israel as well. Now, the Americans, for the first time, are calling on the Israelis, as well as the Indians, Pakistanis and the Iranians to sign the anti-proliferation agreement. The fact that today Obama is handling the issue in a more global way shows that he's not trying to divide the Arab world into moderate and extremists, because I don't think that's the case. But he said very directly that to be able to truly apply a nuclear disarming process for everyone, respecting the anti-proliferation agreements, well, first of all, we had to show that we were able to solve political issues, which in fact are the crux of all of the tension in the Arab world for the past 60 years, and that's the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And I don't think that President Obama is trying to create a diversion. He's just trying to find a solution.
I will have to cut you off, Madam Saeed. This is the end of our program. Madam Saeed, thank you very much for being with us today. From
Madam Leila Shahid, the EU envoy from the PA, Palestinian Authority. Number one album in America, Eminem. I'm going to do a review. A lot of hot beats and a lot of cursing. It's a good album, lyrically and production-wise, but you, I think, really have to be into Eminem. We'll be back. Album review coming up.
I bet you he's faking it. I bet you. I bet he probably just wants to see how upset you would get. I'll go handle this, of course, unless you object. Up his brains out of any left in his head. If you can count the skeletons in my closet, under my bed and up under my faucet, then you would know I'm completely exhausted. Is he nuts? No, he's insane. If you count the skeletons in my closet, under my bed and up under my faucet, then you would know I'm completely exhausted. Is he nuts? No, he's insane. No, tried to bite my face off, but it's got chased off with a chainsaw. Then he took the chainsaw, bit the blades off. Ate the blades, stuck a baseball in a slingshot. Then he aimed at his own face, let the tank.
You are tuned in to the Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, from the Black Coffee Channel.
Nuts like King Kong. Then he set the lawnmower out on the dang lawn. Then he with the thing on. Then he took his pants, he took everything off. Everything except his tank top and his training bra. Ain't he raw? Yeah, maniac, that shady dog. Man, that mother. Gangsta, ain't he dog, shady dog. What be going through that brain of yours? Say no more, what the you waiting for? Sing along. If you count the skeletons in my closet, under my bed and up under my faucet, then you would know I'm completely exhausted. Is he nuts? No, he's insane. If you count the skeletons in my closet, under my bed and up under my faucet, then you would know I'm completely exhausted. Is he nuts?
Cedric Muhammad, Black Coffee Program, June 3rd, 2009. The new Eminem album is the, number one album in the country. Only did 211,000 this week. And only debuted at 608,000. I don't know. I mean, that's a good sign to tell you how bad the music industry is. Shape this in. I mean, then look at, and he doesn't have a big single that I think is doing crazy download numbers. Correct me if I'm wrong. This is why rappers are buying cubic zirconia right now. Anybody pump this? I actually like the album. But Eminem is kind of like U2. I gave this example before. A group whose story interferes with your ability to listen to the music on its own merit.
Naked at McDonald's with all over me behind the counter. Guess I must have just blacked.
You gotta be into the whole story of him, the drug problems. It's like a pharmacy of drugs that he lists throughout the album. Lyrically though, he's sharp. He ain't falling off. I mean, anybody saying that is just being very hateful. This is called 3 a.m. That last cut was called Insane.
Sitting nude in my living room, it's almost noon. I wonder what's on the tube, maybe they'll show some boobs. Surfing every channel until I find Hannah Montana. Then I reach for the aloe and...
This is called Hello. Hello, off the new Eminem album.
Hello, hello. Allow me to introduce myself. My name is...
I mean, the Dre beats are hot. Can't front. I don't know about Eminem singing these choruses. It's like, this is like the new thing for him.
Where the heck is it now? It's the necklace I lost right next to Stephanie's blouse. Man, I should check to see if my mom left any out. Nope, guess I'll reroute. Maybe somewhere in the depths of the couch. Oh, jackpot, yeah, open sesame mouth. Down the hatchet, the feeling you can't imagine.
That's a steep drop. Eminem went from 608,000 sold the first week to 211,000. I remember the second Wu-Tang album fell off a cliff like that. We sold 615,000. The first week and went down to 156,000 the next week. That means that the word of mouth is not strong on this album. This is called We Made You. We Made You. Eminem. Relapse. The name of the album.
Yes, sir. You miss me? Jessica Simpson. Sing the chorus.
When you want.
Tacit is at hand. How does it feel? Is it fantastic? Is it grand? Well, look at all the massive masses in the stands. Shady man, don't massacre the fans. Damn, I think Kim Kardashian's a man. She stopped him just because he asked to put his hands on a massive.
This is Medicine Ball. This is pretty much the whole album. The lyric, the flow is tight. The beats are knocking. But the subject matter is just the same. Over and over again. Perversion, pill popping. Witty punchlines. It's kind of a bit much for 10 years of this. You know, it's been 10 years we've been taking this.
Welcome to the Slim Shady Mecca, Rebecca. It's the village in New York, right next to the Tribeca. That's my sector, homosexual dissector. Come again, rewind selector. I said nice. I had a bisectomy, Hector. So you can't get pregnant if I bisect ya. Hannibal Lecter in the guy section. I bet I tantalize in less than 5 seconds. I get ya. They say once bitten. Twice shy, we'll lie next to the guy with 9 ecstasy pills and 5 extra boxes of Rick condoms and quantities. Why, yes, sir, I took the rest of the Lunesta pills from my dresser.
Indian whackness in the name of blackness. You are listening to the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Show only at blackcoffeechannel.com.
Yeah, it's a lot of pill popping. I mean, this is the main theme, the consistent theme of the album, over hot Dre beats and a nice flow delivery-wise. But if you're not into the Eminem story, I don't think you'll like this. June 3rd, 2009, How to Show in the Diaspora, Eminem. If you have an opinion, let me know. Comment at blackcoffeechannel.com. Stack the emails up. Hour number three. Rappers getting cubic zirconium. We got more to talk about. We'll be right back.
Who can name every serial killer who ever existed in a row? Put him in.
chronological order, beginning with Jack the Ripper. Name the time and place from the zipper. Location of the...
White man makes cigarettes. Cigarettes, the most dangerous product known to man, okay? Kills mother every day. Cigarettes are so dangerous, it kills mother that don't smoke. That's how dangerous cigarettes are. That's right. First-hand smoke, second-hand smoke. People talking out of their necks in the machine like, hey, what's up, man? I love cigarettes. They good. But it's all right, because it's all white. Could you imagine if the Philip Morris family was a bunch of Jerry Curl from Mississippi? Do you know how illegal a pack of cigarettes would be? You would get 60 years for a pack of Newports. But it's all right, because it's all white. That's right. White man makes guns. Nobody gives a f***. White man makes guns. Kids shoot up each other in school. Nobody gives a f***. White man makes guns. No problem. Black rapper says gun. Congressional hearing. Like, oh my God, that said gun. And he rhymed it with fun. And that's why people hate America, man. The hypocrisy of our democracy, okay? That's why they hate America.
Cedric Muhammad.
Yeah, in addition to tree hugging, I was watching Oprah. I may be a convert to that religion, Oprah Anity. That's me. We'll be right back.
Listening to the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Show only at blackcoffeechannel.com. Cedric Muhammad.
Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program, June 3rd, 2009. We're reviewing the Eminem album, Relapse, which lost a lot of sales, fell off a cliff, 600,000 to 200,000 from week one to week two. That's pretty bad. This one right here is called Mr. Mathers. It's just getting a little bit tired. You know, 10-year run for hearing the same story is good, though. Great lyrics, hot beats. Storyline just stale.
Okay, got it. On three. One, two. Let's move.
Now let me get Deja Vu in. This song is called Deja Vu. And you can see Dre is all over this album. The beats are hot and Eminem's flow is sick. But how many times can you hear about somebody dying popping pills or making fun of celebrities? 10 years is enough. Hot beat though. Nod your head.
As I fall deeper into a manic state, I'm a prime candidate for the gene and receive the trait. Blood pressure climbs at a dramatic rate. I seem to gravitate to the bottle of NyQuil, then I salivate. Start off with the NyQuil, like I think I'll just have a taste. Couple of sips of that, then I gradually graduate to a harder prescription drug called Valium.
Yeah, and anybody who, you know, does not acknowledge how good of a rapper Eminem is, get out of your mind. Excellent rapper, one of the best. Top, he's a top. Top 25 ever.
Won't shave his beard again, and he pretends he doesn't hear me. And all he does is eat Doritos and Cheetos, and he just fell asleep in his car, eating three musketeers in the rear seat.
Sometimes I feel so alone, I just don't know. Feels like I've been down this road before. So lonely and cold, it's like something takes over me as soon as I go home and close the door. Kinda feels like deja vu. I wanna get away from this place, I do, but I can't, and I won't say I try, but I know that's a lie, cause I don't, and why I just don't know.
Maybe just a nice cold brew. What's a beer? Got the devil in my ear. I've been sober a year, and that still talks to me. He's all I can hear. Well, so come on, we'll watch the game. It's the Cowboys and Buccaneers. And maybe if I just drink half, I'll be half buzzed for half of the time. Who's the mastermind behind that little line? With that kind of rationale, man, I got half a mind to have another half a glass.
See, the problem with this album is all of the hot songs sound the same. I mean, everything sounds like Crack a Bottle. You know, everything sounds like this. But, you know, if you don't care to get into the storyline, I mean, the beats are hot. Dre did some, put in some real work. Relapse, Eminem, number one in America. America.
Shitty. So crack a bottle, let your body waddle. Don't act like a sobby model, you just hit the lotto.
Let's see if they edit this. They did not. Now this is the edited version. They leave that in.
Really not that many of us. And ladies love us. My pocket's kicking up dust. It's on to the break of dawn, and we're starting this party from dust.
Okay, let's go.
Back with Andre the Giant, Mr. Elephant Tusk. Fix him up, you'll be just another one bit the dust. Kiss one up, my mother's son who got thrown under the bus. Kiss my from under cheese, from under my.
Yeah, I think this is supposed to be on 50's album, by the way. I believe Eminem jacked this. I'm going to do one more cut, and then we'll move on. Ben Harper, the other album that I want to review. Any Ben Harper fans out there, I'm sure you are there.
A lot of people ask me, what the fuck I been at?
It's called Underground.
I don't know. But I do know. I'm back now.
Here comes the rain and thunder now. Nowhere to run, to run to now. I've disappeared, don't wonder how. Looking for me, I'm underground. Here comes the rain and thunder now. Nowhere to run, to run to now. I've disappeared, don't wonder how. Looking for me, I'm underground.
Rain, I'm down here, under the ground. Dig me up, broken tibias, fibias. Yeah, pick me up.